All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Thursday, September 15th. I am Doug Norrie, that is
James Davis.
And we're here to break down a little bit of week two with the plays that we put up for FanDuel and DraftKings this week. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Here to help you get started or continue playing FanDuel and DraftKings NFL. If you head over to the site now, you grab a free trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Helps you one-touch click optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. And also access to our brand new state-of-the-art player lab that helps you really get granular with a bunch of different settings and filters and queries. Really everything you need to get yourself started for NFL. All set to go after a free trial and then $29.95 a month after that. All right, buddy, let's talk a little week two football. Do we want to start with tonight's game? Because we're recording this Thursday morning. Should we get tonight's game out of the way real quick, and then we'll get to our picks?
Yeah, I think it's worth nodding to at least. I mean, we did learn a couple interesting things about these teams in week one. So while it's a pretty low total game, inevitably people are going to want some action in tonight's game. So why not?
All right. We have Buffalo and New York. It's one of the lowest over-under games of the week. Might be the lowest. It's in Buffalo. Couple question marks going in. Sammy Watkins is not totally clear to play. Actually, I would suspect he just doesn't play tonight.
And he's not that interesting anyway, probably.
Yeah. Well, you said that we learned a couple things. What did we learn that would make this game interesting at all from a DFS perspective?
Well, the main thing I think that we learned is that the Jets are going to use Matt Forte in much the same way the Bears did, and he's still very, very cheap. I mean, if you think about some of the fantasy totals he was able to put up as a staple in that Bears offense, and the fact that he got 27 touches in week one and put up 145 yards on those touches, that's just a very, very solid running back. And at 6,800 on FanDuel, super affordable. So I think you can definitely do a lot worse than speculating on Forte, especially for big tournaments. That said, unfortunately, given that it's the Thursday game, it's not exactly going to be off everyone's radar. Stands to reason, we've seen in the past, and when people play the Thursday game, they do so with the intention of playing the guys in Thursday, though any of the ones that make any sense at all. So I'm not sure that it's a guy you want to go to for your cash game plays. He's not an option for me on DraftKings, really, but yeah, a reasonable player and a guy to keep an eye on as things continue to head in the right direction for him.
In our system, we have him as Forte as the fourth highest points per dollar play on FanDuel this week. So definitely up there in terms of value. He'll end up going higher owned than he would if the Jets were just part of the 1 p.m. slate
exactly.
of games.
He's an interesting separation play on a non-Thursday slate, but that'll be more than accounted for by the fact that people just want some action in tonight's game. So you're not really, again, getting away with anything by playing Forte there. But an interesting guy to look at, probably the only one.
Right, and I think I'm with you there. It's hard to get too excited about the Jets receivers this week, even though they do have some target guys in Marshall and Decker, though both were pretty underwhelming week one. Mostly what we're looking at, I think, here on the just for DFS purposes is, like we said last week, is just to kind of stay away from this game, let a couple of these guys go higher owned than they would have naturally if they were just part of a full slate of games, and roster your lineups with guys you know are safe. You know, there's no injury questions around, and there's plenty of guys this week. There's not a ton of injury stuff on the wire right now. So I think you can safely make a Thursday lineup that doesn't have anyone in here where you also are pretty confident that the guys are going to play and be in good spots on Sunday, and let, the Ryan Fitzpatricks, Tyrod Taylors of the world, and some of the other guys, the wide receiver types, go over-owned. Enjoy the game. It's always hard to watch a game and hope for no scoring, but this is again one of the. If you're going to watch any game and hope for no scoring, this is probably the one to do it.
Totally. I think you're exactly right. Basically, any player taken from tonight's game outside of Forte is just people paying the rake for you. So I think it's probably quite a good slate, because normally, like last week, there was a little bit of value on the Thursday game. I think that there's almost none outside of Forte tonight. So I think you can very, very safely play this slate without risking too much.
Yeah, and just, I mean, unfortunately, too, it could just be a very, very boring game to watch as well. All right, let's get into this episode, we'll go into who we wrote up as some of our value plays this week in our main picks article. We put up three pieces of content up on the site right now. We have a main picks article that breaks down all the different positions, 3 to 4 players, or maybe more per position. And we also have specific running back and wide receiver value articles up on the site right now too, which dive in a little bit to some of the cheaper options that we're looking at. So between those three articles, I think you can get a general sense of where our system is going this week, where we see some of the value lie. We'll start at quarterback. talk to me about who you think are either the best plays slash the most popular plays going into this week at quarterback.
Right. So I think that there are a few different directions you can go at quarterback this week, kind of based on how you want to approach things philosophically. So kind of the top tier, the more expensive chalkish plays to me are going to be Cam Newton and Drew Brees. So they're the guys on the top of the hill for me. And then with a nod to Eli Manning underneath. So I'd like to go in and start making a case for a few of these. Maybe we can break down, you know, kind of the pros and cons as we go. So Cam Newton, I think, is probably the one that's going to generate the most discussion this week. He's got an absolutely phenomenal matchup, it looks like, with San Francisco on paper. I mean, San Francisco's playing way faster than they did last season under Chip Kelly. Although this is going to be, I think, hard for people to analyze because San Francisco, of course, coming off of a shutout where they shut off the Rams. So what do you think in terms of what we can make of this San Francisco defense so far?
It's really hard to tell because the Rams may just be historically bad. And so I'm not sure how much you can judge from that Monday night performance, basically because the quarterback play by the Rams was so atrocious. I mean, it was almost like went viral how bad Keenum was, really. And so, you know, you could see the Rams are so bad. I'm not sure you can make any determinations really about the Niners defense, except that the Niners, you know, maybe just aren't, they're not also not a terrible team. And so that probably helps them to some degree. That being said, I'm not making any really great determinations from that one game just because I'm factoring in, I'm playing for opponent there, and that the opponent had a big part to do with it. Cam is a guy that we probably discussed the most this week leading into writing the picks and So why don't you walk everyone through sort of what some of our discussions on Cam were?
Yeah, sure. So I mean, the first thing I think we're looking at is what Vegas thinks of this game. So the 46 total and the 13.5 spread Carolina's way indicates that Vegas is not concerned at all about the San Francisco defense after a week one shutout. San Francisco was 28th against the pass last season. And again, they're paying a faster pace than they were last year. So those factors combined, I think, lead us to at least continue to maintain interest in Newton. From there, though, I think it's interesting because different teams will deploy their quarterbacks in different fashions when the game kind of gets out of hand. And thankfully, with Carolina, we have a pretty good body of work on how they performed and how they utilized him in games that weren't very close last season. So we saw basically a few major things. So the first was that Newton continued to run the ball even in blowouts. You know, a lot of times running quarterbacks will, you know, run out of bounds more or they won't go for the extra yardage. It didn't seem to be that way with Cam too much. You know, we saw a lot of, you know, high single digit or low double digit carries games even when Carolina was crushing teams. Part of this could be, you know, Carolina's at their best when he's in a good situation to run. So we didn't lose a lot there. But one trend we did notice was that Carolina will pass the ball a lot less when things get out of hand. Cam's a pretty efficient passer, but, you know, with the lack of really elite receiving options, Carolina does not do the thing where they, you know, turn their running game into a short passing game. Like, they're happy to ground and pound, even play running backs outside of their running back one slot and just kind of eat the game away. So there's definitely some risk here, but Cam probably safer than a lot of quarterbacks would be, given that Vegas predicts this to be a blowout.
Yeah, the big difference between the Panthers this year and last year, obviously, is he may have that wide receiver one guy in Benjamin now. It's still, to me, I'm still playing a little bit of a wait-and-see approach on that. A lot of the games we looked at were without Benjamin, and I'm just not positive what kind of difference that makes for him in terms of how much he wants to default to running as much, or if he wants to just, you know, pound away targets in that end. That being said, we did downgrade his passing attempts pretty significantly for this game in the worried that he just wouldn't get them, right? They'd just be out ahead and that would be the end of him. But I still think the floor is high. I'm not positive he ends up being a total chalk play because for some of the other guys that we're going to get to in a second, I think are just a little bit more in the public consciousness because of the way the game's going to play out. I love Cam this week. I think it's actually a great spot for especially tournaments where you're going to see a lot of tournament ownership go in the direction we're about to go in a second and just not maybe willing to pay up that $9,000 tag for him. And I get why and it makes sense. But the fact that he gets the red zone rushes, you know, to some degree in that offense, and that if he can get into that double digits in terms of carries, I love the upside. I don't even mind the floor. I'm just a little bit worried about the blowout.
No, I think that's absolutely spot on. One note about Benjamin, he is really not like a possession style receiver, or at least his results haven't been that way. For his career, he's converting about 50% of his targets into receptions, which is dramatically below Like, for instance, last year, the top 40 wide receivers converted 63.5% of their targets into receptions. So you're taking a big discount on efficiency from Benjamin, or that at least that Newton-Benjamin connection. So I would be surprised. Benjamin's a guy to me that carries more risk than a normal wide receiver one would in a blowout, because if Carolina gets up, they're just not going to take shots downfield with him. So I would be a little bit cautious with him in cash games, although, you know, he's still a value given that he didn't exactly explode in week one, and we've seen him be just a tremendous volume guy when things break right. But yeah, I don't think he changes Cam's profile too much for me.
Let's go into the next group of quarterbacks that we have here, and they're actually in the same game. The next two guys we wrote up were Eli Manning and Drew Brees. They play in the game that has by far the highest over/under going into the game, into the Sunday's games. I think it's 2.5 to 3 points more than the next closest one. Expected to be a total shootout again. Neither team that great on defense. Do you see both of these guys? Do you think these guys, some combination of them, end up becoming sort of the chalk plays of the week?
I do think that. So one of the things, if we're concerned about anything here, it would be Eli, because, you know, the Giants only attempted 28 passes in a game that was close last week. So, you know, you and I again went back and forth a ton on, well, what do we make of this Giants team? You know, is Odell Beckham stock down? You know, are they going to be kind of a trap laying and waiting even in a game with a high total? But I think the excellent point you made about that game was that the pace was so grindingly slow in that game. The Cowboys weren't quite ready to trust Prescott downfield. They ran the ball a lot. You know, they just wanted to keep the game close and hope to win in a close game late. So I think that we're going to see a huge expansion of pace for the Giants this week, and that's going to leave Eli being fairly criminally underowned. I mean, this is a guy that's been in the top five in terms of passing yards. You know, he's got a true number one receiver in Odell Beckham, so I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him put up something like the biggest total of the week. And I think those 207 passing yards from week one might be his lowest total of the season when it's all said and done.
Oh, definitely. Dallas had a game plan. They stuck to it. I think they controlled the clock like 65% of the game or something like that. Like, the Giants just didn't have the ball. And that's not going to be the case here. The Saints showed last week that they are fine just playing at a breakneck pace throughout, basically from starting whistle to ending whistle. And there's no reason to suspect that's going to change this week at all. Vegas thinks that it makes sense just from a sniff test kind of thing. Manning comes in significantly less than some of the other guys. Like, he's 8,100. He's 8,100 on FanDuel, so he's 900 less than Cam, and he's actually 1,000 less than Breeze. I think that the savings you get on him is probably worth it for the safety. I always get a little worried on quarterbacks that don't provide anything with their legs, and he is one of them. Like, so he needs it all to happen through the air. Even buzzed off by one or two rushing touchdowns, let's say, if they were to score, does really, really impact his overall line. And so that's kind of the only thing that worries me with a guy like him. After that, though, the price and the game script really seem like he is, he strikes me as very safe.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely correct on FanDuel. On DraftKings, the pricing is a lot tighter, so the difference between Manning and Newton and Breeze, like, it's Breeze is 8,200, Newton 79, Eli 76. So given that tight of a cluster, I think you're probably going to see more ownership among the top guys there, and then Eli becomes maybe more of a tournament-style play. But yeah, on FanDuel, that savings is really significant. I mean, $1,000 is oftentimes easily worth a tier at one of the other positions, like, you know, running back or wide receiver. And that makes a huge difference in a guy who just could be the equal of some of these other guys. Of course, people are going to look at Breeze and I think rightfully see, you know, one of the safest QB options from week to week, and particularly because he's got another great matchup this week. You know, the Giants and Saints were the bottom two teams in terms of defending the pass last season, so this really is like the, you know, the movable objects against the unstoppable force here. So really, really, really good matchup for everyone involved. But Breeze, I think, is actually going to be an interesting guy. I think he's still a great play for this week, and I suspect he might be the top overall quarterback on FanDuel cash games and probably DraftKings too, frankly. But after this week, he's going to go from the Raiders' tremendous matchup, Giants' tremendous matchup, to inevitably facing harder matchups going forward. So I think you could see him being less of a value going forward, but in the short term, he really looks like he's back to his old self again. So I don't see any reason not to roster him.
Yeah, those three, I think, end up being, and really more Breeze and Manning, just from a chalk point of view, end up being the cash game guys. And it makes sense, and I'm just fine rostering all three of them. I really wish that they weren't all playing on the same early slate of games. Like, I like the spread out ownership between – I was hoping that at least just one of them would be – well, I mean, obviously, Breeze and Manning are on the same game, so they're not going to play at different times. But I was just hoping that Carolina would maybe just be out the four o'clock or something like that. That's not the case. They're all playing at one. That's going to be the closest decision for me probably between those three. I actually don't even mind swapping between the three of them really for cash games. I think that you're in a pretty good situation with all three. I don't think you lose much in the way of edge by just having, you know, a little piece of all three. I don't think, you know, sometimes you can hedge incorrectly or hedge yourself to oblivion. That doesn't strike me to be the case with these three guys, because I think that they are head and shoulders above anyone else that's really going on that 1 p.m.
Yeah, games. I think that's absolutely correct. One note about Breeze that people are definitely going to talk about, and I want to get your opinion on this as well, is he is on the road this week. Breeze actually has been a guy who has just been better at home since he's got to New Orleans. I personally am not concerned about the road thing this early in the season. Like, it makes sense in late November and December if you're going to come up to New York and play. But going to New York, it's going to be, what, 75 degrees or whatever. So
right.
I wouldn't worry too much. I mean, sure, it's going to be windier. But, you know, Breeze is a guy who's been in the high 60s, low 70s completion percentage for his career, plays half his games on the road. So I am not worried about that, even though I've seen a little bit of buzz about that so far.
And I hate to, like, default to Vegas as, like, being some kind of, like, all-knowing presence in our lives that knows everything and is infallible in terms of just, you know, how they set lines and things. But, you know, Vegas is aware of all these things as well. And when they still have a game sort of up in that upper echelon of over-unders to go to start with the Saints with a ton of implied points. That being said, not as many as last week. Like, the Saints are not projected for as many points as they were last week against the Raiders. A little bit, like, you know, moving on the road hurts them a little bit there. You know, Giants maybe slightly better on defense than the Raiders, though not by any stretch, huge stretch. But so the numbers do look a little bit lower. But yeah, I think this game is the game that you see people stacking a lot. The last guy that we wrote up, and I'm not actually sure if we wrote up Phillip Rivers, and I still am on the Phillip Rivers train for a couple reasons, though I'm a little bit more bearish on him than since the time that I wrote him up. What are your thoughts on Rivers this week?
Well, Rivers is an interesting play because he's a guy that's criminally underrated from season to season, right? I mean, he's put up a ton of big seasons. He's obviously not in that top category with the Breezes and Andrew Lux and Aaron Rodgers of the world in terms of complete upside, but he's definitely a guy that's gone out there and put up 400-yard game with multiple touchdowns. So against, in a great matchup with Jacksonville, and, you know, a reasonable spread in this game, the total 47, Chargers favored by 3, he seems like a guy who, you know, you wind up paying down for him and paying up at other positions, and that's kind of your strategy or your hypothesis that you're testing during the week. So from that perspective, I definitely understand it, but it does seem to me that, you know, some of the other extenuating circumstances, primarily losing Keenan Allen, right, make it a little tougher on him this week than it would be otherwise.
I didn't really realize the difference that I really feel bad because I can't remember exactly who I saw post this, or else I would definitely give them credit, but there was a huge drop, and I can look it up myself, obviously, but there's a huge drop off Rivers last year from the time that Allen was in, was not hurt, to the time that he was.
Sure.
And there was, I mean, something like a 25% downgrade in terms of just overall passing yards for the Chargers. Now, it was a downgrade for him too in terms of accuracy, because Allen just provides all the things a guy like Rivers, because Rivers is a good quarterback, and Allen provided all those things that he really needs, that possession guy that he could sort of target over and over again, crisp route runner that will just be there when the ball's there. The drop off that Rivers gets from Allen to, you know, the Inmans of the world or Travis Benjamins, like, that is a pretty significant drop off. What keeps him up there is the Jaguars just are so bad against the pass that, and Rivers will even throw to the running backs, you know, to Woodhead. So I'm willing to be fine with it still, but I'm just not as excited as I was before I kind of seen the difference between Allen to no Allen for Rivers.
Yep, I think that's a fair summary of how we feel about Rivers going in this week. And listen, I mean, you know, to win big tournaments, you're going to need to kind of go off the rails sometimes. You know, sometimes the chalk plays wind up working out and winning big tournaments, but a lot of times you can just stack some of the guys around the fringes. If you think you can grab Rivers and you can forecast where those targets are headed, you might be in this, you know, maybe it's a clever Rivers and Danny Woodhead stack or something like that. You might be able to make some interesting things happen for yourself. But yeah, overall, it's a situation that, you know, with Eli being just 400 more, it's hard to make a case, I think, for Rivers on FanDuel.
Yeah, the more interesting case probably for me is just in that 4 o'clock slate of games. There's a couple other interesting guys there. Matt Ryan and Derek Carr play against each other. That's not a bad situation from them. But the 4 o'clock group of quarterbacks just isn't nearly as enticing as that 1 o'clock group. So Rivers would be a guy that I'm probably more targeting in the later set of games more than I would. I definitely wouldn't do it for cash in that early slate because you just don't need to. There's so many other good plays there. Let's go into the running backs. So we did not go out on any kind of limb in the first guy we wrote up, which was D'Angelo Williams. But just because, hey, look, when you're coming off the best game of the week and then to put a guy like that in as your top play isn't like, I don't know, that's not just analysis that anyone would consider to be like expert level, but it's still correct, right? So
yeah, well, did you partially put him in there because he was our top play of week one as well?
Oh, no, I don't do that either. But no, I don't know. Actually, I don't even know if I mentioned it. But yeah, he was the guy that was in every single lineup for us. Any slate that he was available on, Williams was in the lineup for us, and that paid itself off pretty well. But get him.
And the primary reason there is volume, right? I mean, yep. Williams is the guy we saw the Steelers, you know, knew full well that with Le'Veon Bell on the shelf, they're ready to just run Williams left, right, and center and pass him the ball as well. So that bore out 100% in week one. The interesting wrinkle for week two, I think, is that he did miss practice on Wednesday for undisclosed reasons, according to the Steelers camp. Now, this is not too concerning, probably. I mean, he had just come off a game where he had 32 touches on a Monday Night Football, so chances are good they're just keeping him fresh and, you know, again, want him to grind him into the ground against the Bengals for week two. But, you know, it's at least worth keeping an eye on, because otherwise, if everything is just fine and turns out it's just for rest, then yes, he's an every lineup guy. And I don't think it's too complicated, right? I mean, these days, running backs don't ever touch the ball 30 times a game. And even if Williams isn't a favorite to touch the ball 30 times a game, he's going to touch it 25 or 26 times. And that's going to be more than enough, especially given that you're not really even paying running back one prices for him.
And the prices for FanDuel and DraftKings were out before the Monday night game happened. They'd already posted leagues for the next week. And so his price just didn't move at all because he wasn't like a total crazy ownership guy going into week one either. So, you know, I don't know exactly how those guys calculate, or girls calculate, their salary algorithms.
Probably tons of girls do. That was a fair guys or girls caveat.
Thanks. So so the price really doesn't move at all for him. Is he still the same exact price? The situation to me doesn't.
No, he's more expensive. He's 500 more.
Oh yeah, that's right. He was 71. I was looking at his DraftKings price and turning it over to FanDuel, but still 7600. Just lock and load time. The Bengals matchup isn't so different than the Redskins matchup. You know, at this point in the season, they're not a team that I would avoid. And like you said, volume is completely 100% there for him. So I think he's the cash game play for us probably across the board again. And that's not going to be anything different than anybody else. The next guy we had up on the list may be a little different than some of the other plays that are going to go off this week. We had C.J. Anderson. Anderson is a guy who saw some volume here. The quarterback play is a little suspect. Can you trust a guy like Anderson in cash games?
I think so. I mean, given, like you mentioned, the suspect quarterback play of Trevor Siemian, and, you know, all the falling over him that the announcers did notwithstanding, because, again, he wasn't absolutely terrible in the first week. Still, Anderson's a guy who got 24 touches, very, very stout defense, and still put up numbers. I mean, 2 touchdowns, 139 total yards. Obviously, I mean, it's hard to get a worse matchup than facing Carolina, so sliding over and facing the Colts, who are definitely quite a bit softer against the run, this seems like just a terrific spot. Anderson also, given the less certain nature of that situation going into the season, is still not totally priced like a running back one. At 7,800, I think he's strictly a worse value than D'Angelo Williams if you have to choose between the two, but I don't see any reason why you shouldn't just try and play both. Anderson's the more affordable guy on DraftKings, which I think, you know, things start to get a little bit more interesting there. He's only 300 less, so it's not like you're really crushing it. But, you know, it's rough that he's competing with Williams for that similar price zone slot, but can't blame anyone for playing him really in any format.
I think Anderson makes both good cash and tournament play. I do not think he'll be a guy that is on a ton of radars this week because just the price, the Broncos. There's a lot of reasons to not like the Broncos, like especially if you like watched them last week. They're just like not a very exciting team. There are other running backs with bigger names. But Anderson has so many things in his favor this week that just seem to equate to fantasy success. He's a pretty big favorite. Denver's -6 going in, and we've seen that, you know, bigger running back games are while not like, you know, one-to-one correlated with spreads, it definitely appears to really help to come in as a favorite. And yep. he has one of the bigger, you know, opening lines of the whole weekend at -6. And Denver is just incentivized to not turn the game over to Simeon. They were pretty clear about it in the first game, and I think that they'll continue on along that path now, that they want to rely on their defense. They want to grind the game down. The Colts are a bad, bad defense. And so all the things for me just kind of line up with him as a really strong play. And I'm just not sure that other people are going to go down that path, because it's just not that exciting. Like, there's just other big names that, like, you drafted in your year-long draft that you like better, you know, or whatever. Like, there's a lot of other big names that will jump to the top of the list for you that are not CJ Anderson. And I just love them even from a separation point of view.
Well, I think that's right. And I think it's, you know, a lot of people will just look at Anderson's game log and fall into the trap of thinking, like, okay, same guy, same situation as last year. You know, the carries were kind of up and down. But listen, the Broncos released Ronnie Hillman before week one. Anderson actually just is the guy now. And if the week one is any indication, you know, the Broncos still want to run the ball a ton. Like, it's a really, really weird situation, because last year, people might not know the Broncos, you know, like, against the Patriots in the playoffs, they ran the ball 30 times. Like, the Broncos really, really want to run the ball. And if there's not going to be anyone to compete with for carries in that RB1 spot for Anderson like there was last year, he could just wind up being a monster. Like, he could wind up being in this D'Angelo Williams camp of 25 to 30 touches a game, because, you know, I don't think Devontae Booker is going to be nearly the threat to his touches that Hillman was. So I'm all over it for this week.
So I have a no halftime challenge for you. And before we throw it out,
can I tell people what a halftime is?
100%, buddy.
Yeah, dude. So nohalftime.com is one of our sponsors. They host a really, really unique kind of fantasy contest where essentially what you do is you can either surf their app for challenges that other people have issued, or you can create a challenge yourself. And what a challenge is basically you say, I like this guy more than that guy. So all those barroom, you know, Sunday, Thursday, whenever you're watching football, arguments that you get in where people are like, man, you like Williams this week, I like Anderson, you know, those all those terrific arguments that you get in that never go anywhere and people never put their money where their mouth is. Now you can put the money in your mouth or take the money out of their mouth. You can make a bet with them or a wager of skill, a one-on-one daily fantasy contest against them, where essentially you say, I think D'Angelo Williams is going to score more points than Lamar Miller or, you know, CJ Anderson or whoever else. So it's nohalftime.com. You download the app. You can issue your own challenges if you think you've got a sweet spot where the public opinion is wrong, or you can just surf around for challenges that other people have made that you think you have an edge on. There's always hundreds of challenges to sort through. You and I are both very, very happy No Halftime users. We were before they were on as an advertiser. So if you go to nohalftime.com, you can use promo code DFSR25. You can get 100% bonus up to $25 on your first deposit and get cracking. So it sounds like you wanted to lose another no halftime challenge to me. So why don't you go ahead with that?
Okay. So, well, this is an interesting one. So you mentioned, you know, you're in the bar at 4 o'clock. You're a few back and you're about to start the 4 o'clock games and you have no halftime out and you have CJ Anderson against against the Colts, or you have David Johnson against the Bucks. Is this a challenge? We have Anderson as projected just as more raw points than Johnson. Johnson's more expensive, obviously. Does this strike you as correct? Is this a one that you would put up on the board kind of and hope that someone would take it? Because I think 100%, if you put up a CJ Anderson versus David Johnson where you took the Anderson side of things at no halftime, it would get scooped immediately. Is this something?
Yeah, you'll get that challenge accepted.
You feel safe doing it?
That's a great question. I mean, it's close, right? Because the thing about Johnson is that obviously, like, his catch and run ability out of the backfield is going to give him an upside that's pretty tough to match the running back position. Obviously, you've pointed out Johnson is the guy who's put up the biggest fantasy total of any player of all last season. Right. That was given that he wasn't even the starter all season long. So, yeah, I mean, Johnson's a terrific talent. Reasonable matchup this week. I still do think you're probably going to get more safety out of CJ Anderson. So I think on a week-to-week basis, that's a reasonable bet to make, but I think you could take D'Angelo Williams against David Johnson and get your bet accepted. So I think I would rather go that route personally. But I think that I trust the system here. I do think Anderson will outperform Johnson.
Interesting. Yeah. So like I want to make them so they're not just so obvious, right? But the Williams one, we have him. So we have Williams for 18.45 points on FanDuel, and we have Johnson for 16.3. That's a pretty significant gap. So between those two, it's not, like I said, it's not as close. It's less than a total point on CJ Anderson. I just thought it was mostly interesting that they were in the same realm as each other. The next,
well, and I think it's really, really worth it looking at Johnson for a second here. When you're considering taking a guy on your top price tier, what your goals are for the contest you're involved in. So just trolling around his game log at the end of last season, I mean, some of these lines are amazing, right? I mean, in the final game of the season against Carolina, he had, 128 total yards, 9 receptions, and a touchdown. Like, you'll take that every day. Now, in the game before that, where they beat Green Bay, he had 78 total yards on 21 touches and no touchdowns, right? So, like, he's not a conventional goal line back. A lot of his touchdowns have to come from, you know, kind of a little bit further out or come out of the passing game. A game before that, he got blitzed by Seattle. He had 25 yards on 11 carries and 34 yards on 3 receptions. So he's absolutely a guy that can disappear or absolutely go off. So it evens out to the point where he is worth a top-tier price tag, but he's not that week-to-week guy that's going to steadily grind out 4.5 yards a carry. He's just not that guy. So with Johnson, you're hoping for those 20-plus yard touches, which makes him an excellent big tournament play. But again, everyone knows that. So if you're not getting away with anything playing Johnson, I just don't. He's not a guy probably I'll wind up rostering hardly at all this season.
Yeah, worth mentioning, last year the Buccaneers, I mean, that's who Johnson plays, were 9th in DVOA against the rush, which, I don't know, that's way higher than I thought they were. So not a bunch has changed about their team, but you know, Johnson's just clearly like the more popular play, so I figured we'd throw him out there. Let's talk
I think it's worth it. I mean, the Bucs are also so bad against the pass, it stands to reason the Cardinals are just going to come in and light them up through the air, so that also kind of hurts Johnson's stock a little bit this week. But yeah, always very interesting to note when you can even have a reasonable conversation about guys that are spread out 2,400 in salary. That alone probably tells you all you need to know.
Speaking of salary, we have a couple cheaper guys coming up in our pick. We try to spread out the picks between some more expensive and some cheaper plays, because you obviously cannot make lineups filled with all the most expensive players. Two of the cheaper guys that we have are Rashad Jennings and TJ Yeldon. Both coming in that 63 to 65 range, FanDuel, and Yeldon's 47 on DraftKings, Jennings is 56. Talk about some of the process we had for some of these guys, and do they strike you as safe for cash games?
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking a breath because it's always hard to talk about safety when you're thinking about a guy like TJ Yeldon. Yeldon was really interesting because, you know, we brought this up, but your brother-in-law Casey brought him to us as a guy who he thought was a big candidate for a breakout week one when the news of Chris Ivory going down happened. It was actually interesting because we were, I think, correct overall on his performance and that he wasn't phenomenal, but he got way more touches in the game than I would have expected. And it's kind of hard to analyze, right? I mean, you're getting a guy at 6,500 who touched the ball 25 times in week one. Now, in the not all touches are created equal category, he did get 21 rushes for 39 yards, which is quite horrible. And really, 4 receptions for 30 yards is nothing to write home about either. Very encouraging that he did get the rushing touchdown. And then Jacksonville kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, whatever, man, you're going to get 2 yards a carry. Keep going. We're in this thing. You know, like, let's not blow it. So I think that he is just a great value. He's going to be somebody, I think, who's going to be off a lot of radars just because the yards per carry are so poor. So I don't know that he's someone you want to stick your neck out on and play in a cash game, right? I mean, do you feel good about playing him in cash games this week?
I don't feel good about him because I think he personally stinks. But the that's never a good place
ouch,
to start.
Ouch.
Right, that's an ouchie, you know? the thing with him, though, is he does stink. But they don't have anyone else. Like, Ivory was just released from the hospital. I don't think – it really doesn't seem like he's going to play. Like, that guy was, you know, sicker than I am right now. And that's really sick, buddy.
Sick isn't amazing, right?
No, sick isn't, like, just feels terrible. I think Yeldon gets the same amount of sort of volume going in. He has a much better matchup against San Diego this week. San Diego, 30th or 31st in the league, DVOA against the rush last season. Spencer Ware was able to do some work against them last week, so it's not like they've made any, you know, huge changes, I don't think, on the defensive side that were you off the matchup at all. It's really just that volume, man. Like, for 4,700 on DraftKings, that is so cheap. And if you think that if he's the goal line guy, plus he's a 20 to 24 touch, I'm going low, by the way, so, like, I think that last week's thing is probably as high as you'll see for him, but maybe not. But let's just be conservative on him for a second. If you think he's in that 20 to 24 touch range on DraftKings and he is getting balls out of the backfield, that's really hard to look past. And I think at that point, you really can start taking a pretty hard look at him in terms of cash.
Well, and I think we saw this with Spencer Ware last week. He's the most timely example, but there have been historical examples of guys where they're just so cheap and the volume is clearly going to be there that you wind up with two things. First of all, you wind up with an extremely high floor, right? It's going to be really hard for Yeldon to be much worse than he was last week on 24 touches, right? I mean, you know, he's not going to probably be a 2 yards per carry guy. Just basically no one in the NFL is. And if he's going to get 3 or 4 receptions like that, all of a sudden you're looking at a guy who probably, you know, you can pencil him in for 2x points per dollar. And then you get situations like where last week, where a few things break right, and all of a sudden you're scoring touchdowns and, you know, the team is riding the hot hand. Another great example of this, I think, just because this wound up being one of our greatest calls of all time 2 seasons ago, deep dive it, go for Trey Mason, right? So right. Trey Mason is a name I'm mentioning. And if you were new to DFS or just new to fantasy football in the last few years, that might not even be a name you recognize. But he was a guy in the Rams who had come off a 29-carry game against the Broncos in which he just had a vanilla 100 yards, right? No touchdowns. He had 1 reception for 2 yards, but it was clear that the Rams were going to continue trotting him out there. And he was like in the 5,000s on FanDuel. So we kept recommending him, kept putting him in all the cash game lineups, goes out against the Raiders, scores 3 touchdowns, one of the highest scoring games of all season long. You got him for 5,200. But it wasn't really like an out of bounds performance for a running back. I mean, it was 160 total yards, and he happened to be the guy who punches it in the end zone. Now, I don't think Yeldon's a favorite to do that this week, but given some of the lack of the Chargers' offensive weapons, this could be a close game where Jacksonville wants to play more of a possession game instead of just huck the ball down the field to Allen Robinson. So I'm not saying you can pencil him in for 150 total yards, but when you get a guy who's this cheap and this kind of off the radar, very, very, very interesting tournament play. So just want to break it down very long form on TJ Yeldon, probably the most I'll ever talk about this guy, especially if he performs as we think and his price gets a little bit more fair. But yeah, very, very interesting on all sides.
And like I said, I think you can even, on DraftKings especially, you can even consider it in cash. The other guy we mentioned there was Jennings against the Giants, against the Saints. He's a guy showing up also high in the system. Got some carries last week against the Cowboys. I think he was in the mid-teens in terms of carries. Not much out of the backfield. Is he a guy, because of the game flow here, that you can consider at 6,300 on FanDuel? And I think he was a little bit, he was like in the 5,000s on DraftKings. What do you think about Jennings?
Yeah, Jennings is a guy, I mean, most people are going to look at him and probably not feel overly excited because, you know, he's been someone who's burned a lot of teams in the past. He's been sort of up and down. But the Giants have shown that when he is right, they really are willing to ride him. I mean, final game of the season last year, he got 27 carries, you know, 170 yards. And obviously that was in a nice matchup with Philly. But yeah, he'll touch the ball 20 times when he's the definitive guy in that Giants offense. And in a game with such a high total, getting a clear running back one in a game with a 53 total. And I do think the Giants will pass the ball a lot. But like if the Giants do happen to grab a lead, you could see Jennings' total go even higher than that. Like I think 18 carries in a game where the Giants only ran, I think, 46 offensive plays or something like that. That's really quite a tremendous amount. So if he's going to have that percentage of the Giants' overall plays go his way, yeah, he could wind up being a guy with, you know, 25 plus touches in the next week. And it wouldn't surprise me at all.
In the same price range, Yeldon strikes me as safer for the volume. I think if I were to make a bet now about who was more likely to get 20 touches, let's say, in the game, I would easily call Yeldon in this case because I would just be a little worried that the Giants can just get into a thing where they throw 42 times, and especially if they're seeing something on the Saints' side of defense where they just know they can exploit guys like Beckham and Shepard really just all over the field, and that could just be the end of Jennings. And so he's much more likely to finish with, than Yeldon in this case, to finish with, you know, sub double digit targets and carries.
No, that's fair. I don't think he can go sub double digit carries. I mean, that would be crazy to me. I mean, well, although, let me correct myself in saying one thing that really does hurt him is that he's not the third down back, right? With Shane Vereen there, Jennings is probably not going to be featured in the passing game whatsoever. So, you know, that significantly lowers his ceiling and lowers his floor on some level. But Nah, he's not going to get fewer than double-digit carries. I think that's out of bounds.
Let's get into the wide receivers. Oh, and we, like I said, there's a couple guys we didn't mention. I'm just going to fire the names off really quick. They're as part of the running back value plays article. We'll get a little bit more into these guys when we do game-to-game breakdowns. But those were guys like Danny Woodhead. You have the Patriots running back situation, which I find is interesting. So there's a couple more running back guys that are coming on the cheap side. Check out the value plays article that's up on the site now if you want to see those. And we'll touch on those guys tomorrow when we go full game-to-game. Let's go over to the wide receivers this week. The two guys at the top of our list, and again, this is not going to be any new analysis for anybody really that knows anything about football, so I'm not, you know.
Nothing sells a podcast like you, buddy, just so you know.
I'm ready
for no analysis.
Well, I'm too humble for my own good is the problem. That's a word that a lot of people use to describe me. Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham Jr. top the list for us. Both are priced up in the upper register. It will be difficult to roster both on the same team unless you go super cheap at probably running back and quarterback just because of the way they're priced. Are these two guys just the chalk plays for you this week? And if you had to choose one over the other, where would you go?
Well, yeah, I think that it's actually sort of unfortunate that Beckham has such a phenomenal matchup this week because he was a guy a lot of people were talking about, like, is a bust or is he going to slump this season? What's changed? You know, Eli can't find him, whatever. And again, like the Giants, I forgot about Vereen's carries out of the backfield last week, but still the Giants were in 54 plays. That, you know, just to be clear, the slowest teams in the league allow something like 62 offensive plays to their opponents in a given week. So the Dallas allowing the Giants just 54 plays, that'll probably wind up being the Giants' lowest total of the season. So the 8 targets on Beckham are a lot less troublesome than they might be in a normal matchup, or certainly if he had a fast matchup. So going from playing against Dallas to going against the Saints, which in a game that probably has the highest total projected plays for the week, means Beckham is going to be a much bigger value even than normal. So I would have really loved Beckham, I think, more for separation in big tournaments had this not been just an ideal matchup. Given that it is an ideal matchup, it's probably right that people will just kind of grit their teeth and put him in there. I do think it is pretty interesting comparing him to Brown because that is a decision most users are going to have to make. Brown, obviously, I think the thing Brown showed us in week one, I mean, if he's going to go up against Josh Norman and put up totals like he did, it's really hard to call him on anything other than the safest overall wide receiver, right? Like, I mean, can his targets go anywhere but up from here?
Well, Norman didn't cover him the whole game. They moved him around and they, you know, Norman caught a lot, I don't know if you saw this, but Norman caught a ton of flack really just about throughout the whole NFL industry by not covering Brown the whole time. It's unclear if it was Norman's fault or not.
you understand that was a game plan going in, though, right?
Like, no, I understand this. I'm just saying that Brown's volume and his success weren't just against Norman, right? That's all I meant.
I know that, but at least a good percentage, every time they were lined up on the same side of the field and, you know, they weren't moving around in the backfield, he was lined up against Norman. And the fact that he can do that, that's about as bad a matchup as he's going to see all season long. And while the Bengals are much more of a sort of league average or even slightly above league average matchup, they won't be as bad as the Redskins. So I think that Brown is still like head and shoulders the safest play of the week, although I think Beckham has considerably more upside.
Yeah, it's going to be difficult on DraftKings. DraftKings pricing is very tight this week where you probably need to pay up for one of those three quarterbacks that we talked about. You really don't feel great getting away from a guy like D'Angelo Williams. And you also don't feel great getting away from guys like Brown and Beckham, but you simply cannot roster all of them. And because there just isn't a bevy of very, very cheap plays. And so what you end up seeing is, honestly, for our system right now in DraftKings, Brown being the odd man out between the quarterback and the running back play. It's, you know, obviously this isn't set in stone going into Thursday, definitely not set in the stone going into Sunday, but Brown ends up being just a tick below. And it's mostly because he's like 10,000, he's 9,900 on DraftKings. And now you're really getting into the maybe priced out of contention thing. Beckham just a hair below him, but only 400 less. So it's not like you get any great savings. These are the two of the most expensive players heading into the week, but I think they have probably the two highest upsides of the week total.
A gun to your head, who do you like for cash games personally?
Brown. You can't. Beckham's just not in the same target arena as Brown. So it's close, but I just. The Steelers have shown like what their plan is. Their plan is just to throw to him as much as possible, right? it's just not really in question at this point. It's totally set in stone. Beckham, while I mean obviously transcendently elite, he will disappear. He'll give you a 6 target game every once in a while, and that's just enough worry for me. to just say Brown is a play for me over Beckham. The only thing that keeps really, honestly, the thing that keeps Beckham close in terms of projection is the matchup. The Saints are so epically bad against the pass that that is what boosts Beckham so far up, even up below Brown. And even that is not enough to eclipse, you know, our projection on Brown. So yeah, for me, it's Brown all day. The two other guys that we mentioned in the article after Brown and Beckham were Kelvin Benjamin, who we mentioned a minute ago, and also Larry Fitzgerald. Talk to me about whether or not these are guys that you wouldn't mind grabbing. Sort of now we're talking middle tier in terms of pricing. 7,400 to 7,500 on FanDuel, 6,465 on DraftKings. They're basically the same price this week.
Yep, another spot where users are probably going to have to pick between the two, if you know, just because it's sometimes hard to roster guys at the same exact price at the same position. So I think they make kind of two very, very different cases. Benjamin to me is the big upside guy who, you know, when it's all said and done, he might wind up being a guy who garners targets on the same level as Brown and Beckham. The Panthers really lack a lot of other options. You know, there's a lot of Devin Funchess buzz going into week one. The Ted Ginn buzz is always sort of, you know, lurking, but never really has come to any sort of fruition there. So, you know, given the 12 targets and, you know, a very, very bad matchup with Denver, this could wind up being Benjamin's signature breakout game, particularly if San Francisco, you know, what we saw in week one was not all just smoke and mirrors. If they can actually hang on some level, then Cam is going to be looking for Benjamin. And heaven forbid San Francisco should get a lead. It'll be Benjamin all day. So it wouldn't surprise me to see him putting up one of his bigger games of the season and kind of moving into that next category of player. That said, I pointed out in Cam's piece, Benjamin very erratic, 50% conversion rate on targets to receptions over his career means he's a guy that you're going to not feel fantastic about playing in cash games. And then you basically look across the field, look across the league, the DFS landscape, I guess, and you look at Larry Fitzgerald, and he's pretty much the polar opposite. I mean, he's a guy who converts a huge percentage of his targets into receptions and, you know, as more of a possession guy in Arizona, and the guy who obviously, you know, years past, they bring in these new faces. Now it's Malcolm Floyd and John Brown, but, you know, Fitzgerald, 8 catches on 10 targets in week one. He's their primary red zone option. I mean, he's, and arguably that gives him just as much upside as Benjamin too. So I think that, you know, Fitzgerald clearly the safer of the two, although I'll still nod to Benjamin for greater upside.
Yeah, I would, it's funny. They have question marks, but the question marks are totally different for me. So the Benjamin question mark relies more on how the game flows. If Carolina were to get up early, I'd be really worried about, and especially, you know, they still have sort of danced around the idea of snap count for him as they want to bring him along slowly. They didn't do that in week one at all, so who knows what they do again here. I'd get a little bit worried if Carolina got a lead early in this game and that was kind of the end of him because they wanted to save him. That being said, the Fitzgerald side of it is, you know, you mentioned they have other weapons there and other matchups. If Palmer just singles out a different matchup than Fitzgerald, there's just enough other guys on the Arizona side of the offensive side of the ball that worry me about taking Fitzgerald's volume away. So the question, neither of these are like our red alert questions for me. I like them both, but they both, those are the things that I get a little bit worried about for each of them, and they're just obviously totally different reasons.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I guess, and I think there's actually one more thing in Fitzgerald's favor and one more thing against him the more I think about this, because, well, first of all, he was limited in practice on Wednesday, and while obviously that didn't show any signs of the ankle bothering him against the Patriots, you know, you never like to hear that from a tiebreaker perspective. That's not a good thing, certainly. But then on the other side, you know, we saw Mohamed Sanu really go in a very, very similar role to what Fitzgerald should have this week and kind of light up the Bucs in the first half of last week's game. So given that, you know, that the Falcons were probably doing that as a plan B and Fitzgerald is much closer to the plan A for the Cardinals, I could really see this being quite a big week for him. So, you know, I think he's a great play. Obviously keep an eye on the injury thing, but for me, it's the clear cash game guy for me for week one and that price tier.
A couple other guys we mentioned that we'll get into tomorrow that are part of the value plays article, Doug Baldwin, Marvin Jones, still in the discussion, Tajay Sharpe, very much still in the discussion there. So we'll touch a little bit more on them tomorrow. Moving into tight ends, we wrote up two guys. We wrote up Jason Witten and Gary Barnage. It's really tough to write up a guy who takes a total zero in the first, yes, and who played, right? It's not so hard when he took a zero because he was hurt or whatever, or like sat out because, I don't know, he had a stomach hurt. But Barnage takes a zero in the first week, and yet we're still sort of on the Barnage train again. Why?
I think the primary reason is that Robert Griffin's not going to play, right? And we saw what McCown likes to do with Barnage. Barnage was one of the safest tight ends in all of football last season. And throw in, I don't mind getting a little bit of separation on him going into this week. Obviously, our call was poor. I mean, we thought we liked him going into last week. Turns out Robert Griffin III is just not good enough to get him the ball, even though he's the best receiver on the team. So I think that going into McCown for this week, much, much, much safer situation. I don't necessarily think he's the play you need to make. He'll be so far off radars, though, that, you know, for big tournaments and things like that, it seems like a fantastic play. I mean, he's got as much upside as any tight end in all of football, and he still was out there for 51 snaps last season, so... And by last season, I mean last game. So that's still a fine total. I'm not overly concerned about that. I will say about Witten, though, I think Witten's really the guy I'm interested in for going into week two. Witten on the field for the full 78 snaps last week, right, which is just absolutely ridiculous. Dallas obviously trying to play this ball control style, and I don't see why that'll change against Washington. I mean, I think this is going to be another sort of grindy matchup where Dallas tries to play the ball control game. And... you know, we see this a lot of times with rookie quarterbacks where they get a receiver that they just feel comfortable with. It seems pretty clear that Witten is that guy for Prescott and for the offense in Dallas because, you know, Dez, while he's obviously a great talent, he's more of a downfield guy, and some of the other closer options like Ezekiel Elliott, really young, Cole Beasley, Terrence Williams, like it just seems that Witten is the sturdy guy who's going to go out and catch the short passes. He didn't get in the end zone, but he will be a very, very prominent red zone target for this team. You can mark my words on that one. And the 9 receptions, I mean, the big story here, especially with tight end in week one, is that it was just such a terrible position. Like, there really weren't any great breakout tight ends. I mean, you can call Julius Thomas one, but, you know, if you want to count on him converting, you know, going back to his Denver days and converting whatever 90% of his targets into red zone touchdowns.
Right.
I I'm not going to go out on that limb. I actually think Witten's very comparable to a guy like Greg Olsen. I think Olsen also a fine play. But you can get it for $1,700 cheaper. So it's going to be really hard for me to get away from Witten for my cash game purposes for week one.
Yeah, he's sub 6,000, and just those targets. If you think that that's the game plan, they're going to go safety valve on him the whole time. Veteran presence. He's not. Yeah, he doesn't light the world on fire for you, but it just strikes me as safe, kind of get in cheap and get out and get your value in other places throughout the lineup.
Exactly. And I think, you know, again, you've got to be sort of out of your mind, in my mind, to pay up for tight end. There's just no Gronk, you know. I get that we always want to look at value over a replacement player, and tight end is such a bad position that guys like Olsen and Reed will be safer on average than some of these lower tier guys. But are you going to pay $7,600 for Greg Olsen or like D'Angelo Williams? Like, I mean, this is just completely ridiculous.
Right.
You cannot pay up the tight end position for week two here. Witten is just such an easy slam home for me, and I won't even think twice about it.
And the thing about Jordan Reed is sort of that same problem that Manning had last week. If Dallas is going, you know, obviously Reed is an elite tight end, and he's almost more like a possession wide receiver at this point. But if Dallas is inclined to just play the slowest offense ever and just keep the ball out of their team's hands, then you just can't even play Reed just on the volume. Even if you thought he was like in a good one-on-one matchup or he was going to see, you know, targets per possession, but those possessions just aren't going to be there for him. I'm totally fine not paying. Go cheap here, 59 on wins.
Reed had 7 receptions for 64 yards in week one. Again, that's not bad, but like you just compare him to other guys in a similar price tier at other positions, like, you know, Reed straight up against Larry Fitzgerald at the same price. I mean, you can't play these guys, especially because it's really hard to get safety at 5,900 at wide receiver. Like, it actually just doesn't exist. You can't do it. And so getting the relative safety of Witten seems like a really easy call.
All right. We'll talk a little bit more about defenses tomorrow as well when we go game by game breakdown. Those are our value plays for the week. Make sure you check them all out and some of the thought process behind it all over on the site. There's 3 or 4 articles up there now, plus a stacking article just went up for tournament stacks. We're from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. This is our last few days of a free trial, and the free trial will be kind of gone after this. So if you're looking, you want to test things out for this week too and kind of see how we put together our projections, you can head over now and /NFL, DFSR.com/NFL will get you that free trial, $29.95 a month after that. That includes optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, plus the player lab that we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. Buddy?
Yeah, filter toggle to your heart's content. Great stuff. We do reserve the right to open free trials back up if it just makes the most sense. But yeah, for now, we're not going to give away the milk when we want you to buy the cow or something. So
he's not the best in the business for nothing, folks. We'll talk to you again tomorrow when we break down all the games. See ya.
All right, buddy. Adios.